Welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I'm Kyle Moinke, joined as always by Ben Raven, where the Lions beat here at MLive. Ben is back in Michigan. I'm still in Arizona. Ben, how you doing, buddy?
I'm okay. It's just kind of been a weird week working. I feel the West Coast complaints about the East Eastern bias. You know, I'm kind of working backwards with the schedule here this week, but we're doing all right.
Well, it's owners meetings week, which I don't think is really like on people's radar, like the casual fans' radar, but it's actually a big information week from our perspective. You know, you get 32 billionaires together and they throw a pretty swanky party. I've been covering this thing for forever and it's honestly been one of my favorite events. You get the 32 general managers there, 32 head coaches. There's just a lot of availability, a lot of stuff leaking out, and we'll get to that. In the pod today, we got five big things the Lions brass said here in Arizona. Unfortunately, as you know, Ben, I'm not in Phoenix. I made it as far as Tucson, visiting a friend, and she tested positive for COVID, had some symptoms. And so I've been staying with her. So I tested and tested positive with no symptoms or minimal symptoms that I wouldn't have even thought anything of if I hadn't tested, but I did, and I was positive. So that kind of shut down my ability to cover the owners' meetings, which is regrettable. I am missing all the free food. We're recording this, what is today? Tuesday. So tonight would be the big party they throw. I can tell you, Ben, 32 billionaires, they know how to throw a party. I've seen like steak bars. I've seen oyster bars. I have seen every bar they have. And I'm instead isolating in a studio apartment. So in Tucson, about an hour and a half away.
Man, yep. Definitely not the week you planned on for sure, but we're rolling with the punches.
It's rough on a number of levels, because like I said, I genuinely on a personal level love covering the owners' meetings. It's the NFL does a really good job, and it's a cool week. And as a non-billionaire, I know that might surprise you, but as a non-billionaire, I get to see a different way of life, and that's pretty cool. But even from a work perspective, it's always a very productive week. A lot of off the record stuff happening, which is nice. It's really the best opportunity, I would say, in the entire NFL schedule to have a chance to just be a human around these guys like Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, the owners. Sheila Hamp has not spoken publicly at the owners meetings. She's hasn't before either, really. She's more private than most of the other owners. I would say more public than her parents, but more private than most of the other owners. But you just get a chance to like connect with these people. They can, you know, see that you're a human being, they're a human being. Everyone's just trying to do a job. And from a work perspective, that's always cool. I've had some interesting sit downs over the years that, you know, they're off the record. So I'm not going to name drop, but yeah, it's been illuminating. I've learned a lot about the game and how it works from covering these meetings. And then, of course, the on-the-record stuff. You get breakfast with all the coaches, AFC one day, NFC the other day. You know what I mean? You can imagine what it's like having breakfast with Dan Campbell for 45 minutes. I mean, not the trip. And that was earlier today. Brad Holmes also spoke in Phoenix to reporters. We have audio. Again, I wasn't there, just to be clear, but we have audio of those sessions. And Ben, there was a lot of stuff that happened this week. We've broken out five things that made a lot of news and I think are worth chopping up. So shall we roll into this?
I think we should. I'm caffeinated like Dan Campbell and ready to roll.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've been up since 4:30 West Coast time, so there's been some caffeine consumed on this end too. Okay, first up, Ben, I really liked what both of the guys, but especially Brad Holmes, what he had to say on CJ Gardner-Johnson. You know, Ben, we did the free agency episode last week and we were raving about, you know, these strategic signings that are culture fits, and particularly in the secondary, and how much they're going to remake what they're doing. Ben, that was before they signed one of the best safeties, one of the best overall players regardless of position in free agency, CJ Gardner-Johnson, really unexpected, and the Lions also didn't expect it. It's not like they went into free agency with Kirby Joseph and Tracy Walker and they're like, hey, we need to get another safety. But that's what they did, and they got, I mean, I love this addition for the Lions in 2023. It's just the 1 year of the deal, Ben, but they're going to get the best version of this guy, and this guy is a very, very good player. So let's get to Brad Holmes, because I really liked how he broke down how this surprising move came about.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, when we talk about corners and talk about, you know, versatility and what we call position flex, you know, CJ was a name that we've heard Aaron Glenn talk about for the past couple of years, you know, and, you know, he's always been a guy that's always been, you know, I don't want to say it's the example, but we knew that was the fit of what we're trying to bring. And, you know, you see, like, he's a real dog, and he's another guy that's a smart football player. And so, again, he was another one that we didn't know if it was going to happen or not, but, you know, we were fortunate enough that the market, you know, came to a place that we were able to make it happen. But his familiarity with Dan and specifically AG, that was a big seller, and we were very, very fortunate that he's had that prior relationship.
Expand on that. Did that come about late just because of the way the market developed? I mean, with him and you sort of?
Yeah, because, like, you know, just being transparent, you know, first of all, like, our grades from our pro personnel department were sky high through the roof, and what he did as a safety, and, you know, luckily, you know, with the ball production that he had, it was justified. And obviously, you know, we invested in Tracy, and he's going to come back from his injury, and he's on track. We fully expect Tracy to be back, and Kirby showed a lot of promise last year. So it's not like we were kind of like eager to acquire another like starting level, high level safety. But, you know, with the position flexibility that he has of to play safety, to play nickel, and the way it all kind of went down is when I saw the grades and the ball production and all that, I was like, okay, this guy's probably getting top safety money, and we're just not going to be in that market. And so as kind of probably midway through the week, I just kept following up with his agent. And my rides home, usually that's my decompression space, but I just kept calling Kevin, just checking in and saying, hey, man, what's going on? And that just kept escalating. And then it escalated all the way up until, I want to say, like Friday, we had a good conversation. And then Saturday, we followed up again just internally as a group. And then even Sunday morning when it, you know, it was just another one of those routine calls, and it just happened to escalate. So, you know, we kind of got in a position where we could get it done.
You're calling him on the way home from the office every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And usually it's just like maybe a podcast or something, or maybe some music, often it's just quiet. But yeah, I was making a lot of calls on my ride home. But, you know, luckily it boded well for us.
When you have those phone calls, how much time do you give these players and agents to get back to you?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the big piece in that, Danny, is just the transparency and the openness and letting them know, like, you know, we are under some kind of deadline or timeline, because, you know, you can put all this emphasis in one player, but you don't know if you're going to get that one player. So if you're putting all your marbles in that basket, you know, all those other players that you're having dialogue with their agents, they might be signing elsewhere. So we just always kind of keep open, transparent dialogue with them. And but it usually works out good that way.
What's the reaction like when you land a player like that and it all comes to fruition for you?
It was huge. I would say, you know, I was really, really excited. I want to say it was about Sunday night. It was probably almost like 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, the kids were asleep upstairs, and, you know, wife was sleeping. I basically woke the whole house up just when we got that done. But just a player of that caliber, how he fits like a glove in our defense, and what he's going to bring to our culture and our style and how we want to play. And, you know, I got a great text from Aaron Glenn as soon as it happened, you know. But it was a good feeling. And, again, you know, just another piece to add and bolster our back end. But it's not just our back end, it's just our defense as a whole. You know, it's just a certain way that we want to play defense, and he fits that too.
Good stuff, Ben. What did you take away from what Brad had to say about the pursuit of CJ?
No, I really enjoyed that he talked about how his rides home are usually like his decompression space, but it really kind of speaks to the level of player Gardner Johnson is that I'm following up with his agent. I'm following up with our guys. Like, what's going on? What's going on? I'm checking on Friday, Saturday, having another good talk Sunday. I think that just really talks to like when they saw that it was a possibility to add such a versatile, just kind of like game-breaking talent in the prime of his career, they leapt at it and they were all over it and they were making sure that they were going to get this guy. And they kind of said, sounds like it started off that familiarity with Campbell and Glenn, and they just kind of fed off it from there, developed that relationship, kind of kept building it. I just loved hearing about that side of it. Like, I love hearing Brad Holmes kind of like gush about being a draft guy, but also kind of instances like this where it's like, I knew I wanted this guy. And it's like, instead of chilling out, I'm checking in on this guy's agent every chance I can get.
Yeah, no doubt. They're lucky he was even available. I mean, again, he. I mean, I love watching this guy play. He was a good player in New Orleans. He became a starter as a rookie. Moved into the starting lineup after that and has never left it. And in 4 years in the league, won three division titles. Most recently was seen starring in the Super Bowl. Led the whole league last year in interceptions with six, which I think is really impressive because he was mostly a slot corner during his years in New Orleans, which, by the way, was playing under Aaron Glenn. These guys go way back, as you wrote on M Life, a few days ago about these guys going way back. Yeah, he was a good slot guy. Then he goes to Philly, where he was primarily a safety and was one of the best safeties in the league, led the league in picks. The versatility is just so good. And Philly tried to bring him back. They tried hard. They put the full court press on him. But Gardner Johnson was holding out for more cash, basically. And eventually the Eagles, knowing they have to re-sign Jalen Hurts, just went in other directions. They only had so much money to spend. They had to take care of Darius Slay, a couple other guys. And basically, they ran out of time and money to make things happen with Gardner Johnson, at which point he turned his focus to other teams in the league. And he has his prior relationship with Aaron Glenn going way back to high school, played for him in New Orleans. They have a great relationship. Ben, it's like a perfect constellation of factors because there's no way this guy should have been available anyway. And even if he were available, he should be making more money over a longer period of time than what the Lions could give a safety at this point. After paying Tracy Walker last year, after drafting Kirby Joseph, they signed two like starting cornerbacks earlier in free agency. Like, there's no way they should have ended up with this guy, but they did. And Holmes was sensing that it was possible. And like you said, he's like hitting up his agent every day, calling him in his car, whatnot. And I loved when he talked about the celebration in his household and how he woke up his whole house when that deal went down. And I can confirm what he said. It was like 10, 10:30 p.m. on Sunday, as someone who had to work that, or thought I was gonna have to work it. You worked it because I didn't see the text for like 20 minutes because it was 10 p.m. on a Sunday. It's a great fit for this defense, Ben. And I don't know really where they're going to put him, whether that's safety or slot. I suspect it's going to be all of the above, and it's going to make that secondary, which was so bad last year, so much better next year.
No doubt about it. And I'm with you. I really easily see him sliding back to slot, but at the same time, just like based on what he did under Glenn and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like, man, he was pretty good as a safety last year too. So there's a lot of things he can do with this guy. I don't think they'll pencil in him into one role, but man, he's like, what a splash that was. What a just great job to go out and upgrade your defense with one guy like that. Love it.
So when you add this much talent as the Lions have, I mean, three starting caliber players for 2023, in a matter of a week in free agency, between Cam Sutton, Emmanuel Mosley, and CJ Gardner-Johnson, someone's got to get squeezed out, and that someone is looking more and more like Jeff Okuda. So let's get to our second topic here. Ben, sticking with Brad Holmes, he addressed the contractual situation of Jeff Okuda. Well, you know what? Let's like he addressed the contractual situation, which was to not address it, which you wrote about. I actually liked what Dan Campbell said even more about what awaits Jeff Okuda when he comes back to the team this offseason. So let's go to Dan Campbell at breakfast this morning, talking about Jeff Okuda and the fallout from all the moves in free agency.
Man, it adds depth, you know, and it adds competition. That's what it does. That's what we desperately need. So, like, I see those guys coming in and competing, he and Jerry, and, man, it's going to be, you know, and that's the other thing. Just because you acquired these guys doesn't mean it's a lock that they start. It's probably a pretty good chance. That's why you acquired them. But, my gosh, the best guy's going to play, and they all know that. And all you do is you raise your level of competition. You raise the floor. And that's a good thing for everybody.
Pretty self-explanatory. I don't think we have to dwell too much, Ben. I just, you know, it's more newsy than it is interesting, that quote. He's a former top five pick, highest drafted cornerback in the history of the NFL. And yes, he's had setbacks along the way. He's not played well. He's had injuries. But this is the first time where, you know, we're hearing language like this about Jeff Okuda, where he's not assured anything, really. I mean, when he's come back from every injury, he's basically been assured a starting job. And I know they had this quasi battle with Will Harris in camp last year when Okuda was coming back from the Achilles. But, like, that's why I'm calling it a quasi competition, because, like, there was in name a competition, but when you're the only competition you have for a guy is a failed safety playing outside cornerback for the first time. It's not really a competition. It's not like you brought in a Cam Sutton or an Emmanuel Mosley to legitimately compete for a starting job and presumably to win a starting job, which is exactly what's happened this year. And they paid top dollar to do it. Then they bring in Gardner Johnson, who's probably going to spend some time at safety, particularly when Tracy Walker is working his way back. I assume we're going to see a bunch of him in the slot because that's where Aaron Glenn had him before. They've got three starting caliber cornerbacks to bring in, Ben, and you know they're gonna let Okuda compete, as Dan Campbell said. But if Jeff Okuda is not starting for this team in 2023, I would not be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to shop him at this point this offseason. I don't know what kind of value is out there. You and I have had some discussions, you know, off air about that and whether they could move Jeff Okuda. Maybe he's a big enough name where you could package him for something. But I don't know if it would be much, and I just don't expect much from him this year, given what they have done now in free agency.
No, absolutely right. And it's like you said, he came back from that brutal rookie year as a starter. He comes back from the Achilles injury, and like you said, sure, it was a competition from Harris, but like we know what that was. This year, it's like it's cloudier than ever, and it's. And I understand why people are confused about this fifth year option, but $11.3 million is a lot for somebody who isn't an outside starting cornerback or hasn't been full time through 3 years in the league. Now, to your point, is this potential value on the market? I mean, we're recently enough removed, like we're close enough to that draft where I can guarantee you there are still some coaches around this league that fell in love with Jeff Okuda and still think that they can get a lot out of him for sure on that. Now, I'm not talking they'll get a first, second, or third round pick back for him, but like there is something that to that idea, because there's not a shining light at the end of the tunnel for him right now. I mean, he's competing with Jerry Jacobs for outside cornerback reps. Say what you will about Jerry Jacobs, he plays the way Aaron Glenn wants his cornerbacks to play, and we have not seen that type of style from Okuda consistently. And for the people like myself who kind of always thought safety could be a better hold for him, Kirby Joseph, Tracy Walker, and CJ Gardner-Johnson are all going to be better safeties than Jeff Okuda on day one. So it's just, I don't know what's going to happen with him. I mean, I don't think his option's going to get picked up. And like you said, I'm kind of with you. I kind of expect to hear some trade rumblings about him possibly getting his name chopped around more so than the fifth year option. But yeah, he's going to get a chance if he's still here in training camp, but I don't have optimistic feelings for Jeff Okuda in Detroit. Those are kind of gone right now.
I think the only reason we haven't gotten resolution on the fifth year option is because they're trying to leave their, you know, the situation as open-ended as possible while seeing what their options are, especially as it relates to moving Jeff Okuda. Again, I'm more skeptical, I think, than other folks on the beat. I don't think they're going to be able to move him for much, but you know, he'll be a good depth piece to have. As you know, there's injuries all the time, particularly at that position. It'll be good to have a guy come off the bench with his skill set. But Yeah, I think the outlook has never been more bleak for Jeff Okuda's long-term future in Detroit. Let's get to my favorite quote probably from either of these guys. And it was like, I don't know, a matter of 15 seconds after Dan Campbell sat down at breakfast on Tuesday morning in Phoenix. And I think he got a second sport coat, Ben. He's rocked the one for for his entire like 2.5 years in Detroit. This was a tan guy, rocking the tan suit. I know Obama caught a lot of heat for that a couple of years ago, but Dan Campbell can pull it off. He sits down, makes a little chit chat, and then the very first question for him was about this like rising tide of expectation in Detroit, right? Like you've got this longtime loser that's never won anything. Suddenly, one of the trendiest rebuilds in the league, the favorite in the North, the Super Bowl favorite out of the North this year, according to all the books. It's weird. Every time you turn on ESPN or whatever, there's someone singing the Lions' praises. So the expectation has risen, and that's something that in my 10 years on the beat, like any time that the Lions have been able to get their act together, and there's maybe some more expectation for them, it's something they've always run from. Like I remember in 14 when they won a bunch of games, in 15 when they were coming off winning a bunch of games. They did not have the attitude of a heavyweight, of a favorite. They did not wear their expectation well. They felt it was like an uncomfortable suit, almost like Dan Campbell in a suit. But these guys are not doing that. And anyone that's been listening for the past couple of weeks, past couple of months, has heard that. They've heard guys like Alex Anzalone talk about embracing this expectation that their window to win is now. And Dan Campbell, unsurprisingly, echoed that fearlessness at breakfast today. So let's listen in.
It's about raising expectations, like we need to be thinking that way. And everything about what we do needs to have that type of purpose. Our standards have always been about winning, man. You're trying to win every game, but ultimately I think to take the next step, man, you're shooting for the division, because you do that, you win the division, you get a home game, and the rest takes care of itself. That's the next part of the process. Every team should want to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, every year. I said that 2 years ago, of course. But I think we are positioned much better to swing with the big boys this year. Now, does that mean, I can't tell you what that means in win totals, but it means that is the goal, man. We got to go get this division.
Is the vibe different in the building at all in that regard? I mean, you say you want to win every game, but you kind of knew the expectations when you first got here.
Yeah.
When you go out and you take the approach you did in free agency, a little bit more aggressive this year, can you feel like this go for it sense through?
Yeah, I do. I was talking to actually Decker the other day. I just called and see how he was doing, and we got to talking about some things and talking about our ability to win games last year. Once we got in our rhythm, got in a groove, and it was the belief in what we were doing, the belief in the guys around them, the coaches, the teammates, was at an all-time high. And I think there's a feeling that that'll be hard to lose. It would be hard to lose that because I think there again, when you get the right type of guys and have been put through the pressure our guys have, and have come from where they've come from, man, you appreciate it a lot more. And then on top of that, you just keep stacking a little bit of talent. You keep upgrading. You keep bringing in reinforcements. And the foundation is here. And then you bring in guys that are like-minded and about winning and can play some ball and help you in areas. And I think it's hard to fail.
Ben, what do you think of that baby?
It's quintessential Dan Campbell. We got to go get this division just the way we got to go get it. I mean, honestly, and like you said, I can't speak to the other teams that were coming off of strong finishes or playoff berths, but there was like a kind of like a coming to God with what this team is and what they're like supposed to be with on that like final 10 game stretch of the season. I mean, it's felt like a different locker room since those guys took over a couple years ago, but like that down the stretch last year, like, nothing felt like a surprise anymore. Like every win to that point, it felt like a surprise. Them the winning 8 out of 10 games, it just kind of completely changed that. I mean, and they see they were talking about it last year with Rodgers potentially leaving the division, with the Vikings overhauling, the Bears overhauling their front office and stuff like that. I mean, the time is now. I get asked about that every podcast. I just did Channel 7 with Jamie Edmonds the other day. It's like, no, the Lions are the favorite in the NFC North. Like, they should be. Like, this isn't a cute little offseason joke thing. So, I mean, Dan Campbell is Dan Campbell, but it's like there's no tiptoeing around the subject right now. It's time to go get this division. We're trying to win a Super Bowl every year. That's what he's saying, and that's what kind of he's instilled into these guys, and you kind of just felt it take over down the stretch, and now it's even stronger, I'd say.
I'm telling Jamie Edmonds, you think she works at Channel 7, just so you know.
What did I say? 4? Oh, no.
You said 7. She's at 4.
Oh, okay, my bad. Whatever. My bad.
I agree with you, man. I agree with you, and I think everyone's in agreement that this rebuild is way ahead of schedule. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I don't think you expect them. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Malcolm Rodriguez. Yeah. James freaking Houston and back to back day threes. We're not even talking about the front end of the draft. Like, they're getting budding star receivers like Amon-Ra St. Brown in the back end of the draft. James Houston, number two on the sacks list for rookies last year. Only guy ahead of them, Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, they go out there in the top of the draft and they do exactly what they're supposed to. They go out and get cornerstone pieces like Aiden Hutchinson, like Penei Sewell. I mean, who knows what they have in Jameson Williams, but he's coming online this year too. That's how you weaponize a rebuild. That's how you accelerate a rebuild. You maximize your resources, and they've done that as well as maybe anyone in the league in the draft. And they've been careful not to blow their money and overcommit in free agency. And now they're shifting to a different level of free agency where they're going out and getting the impact players at immediate needs. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out where they're at, Ben. Like, the window to win is open. They're spending like it. I suspect we're going to see them draft like it too. And it's really curious. I'm curious to see what they do with the quarterback situation, because they have the flexibility to go get a guy if they want one. But I think their window to win is now. They're spending like it, and they're embracing that expectation. And I love that for this team. Again, they have never done that well in my time around Allen Park. And it's easy to understand why. They haven't won shit since 1993. They haven't won a playoff game since 91. Haven't won a championship since 1957. And they painted those numbers in the back of the freaking film room, in case you forgot any of them, you know. It's an organization that has not handled even like the smallest amount of success well, because they've never really experienced success. And the mentality this time around is different. It feels different on Allen Park. They're embracing it. They're leaning into it. They're not pretending like it doesn't exist. They're not running from their history. They're embracing it. They're embracing the moment. They're a team of the now, Ben. And I think we're going to see them operate like that, sound like that, and ideally look like that.
No, absolutely. And it's just, I mean, the talent acquisition phase is just kind of beginning this offseason too, because as you said, I mean, the way they attacked free agency completely opened up their draft board, and they just so happened to have 5 picks within the first 83 and 2 within the top 20 again. So it's just, I mean, we think we're at a precipice of like expectations right now. I mean, I can't wait to see where it's at in a month and a half after these draft picks are actually made, because I mean, the window to win is 100% now in the, not just the NFC North, in the NFC. Look around the NFC right now. I mean, it's open. It's wide open right now.
Yeah. The AFC is a minefield because of the quarterback play that doesn't exist in the NFC. You got, you know, Jalen Hurts was terrific last year. The Eagles, you know, the Eagles are the team to beat.
Yeah.
San Francisco is very tough, and maybe very, very tough, depending on how you view Brock Purdy. But Jared Goff is in the short list for like the next best quarterback behind Jalen Hurts. And it's weird to say, especially on this program has been very critical mm-hmm. of Jared Goff, and to his immense credit, he's fought through it, both like off the field, you know, with how well he's handled the criticism, and now on the field with him playing some really good football, I think better than anyone outside the team expected. I think if Brad and Dan were being totally honest with you, I think they would tell you that he's playing better than they thought too. I don't really think that they thought that Jared Goff was going to be their guy long term, and he might not be that, although he's played himself into that discussion. And I think chances are very good at this point that the Lions are going to roll with Jared Goff for the long term. And that's Jared Goff's credit because he's played like that. And Ben down here, Jared Goff, unsurprisingly, got another vote of confidence from this regime by way of Lamar Jackson. Both Brad and Dan were asked about the Lions' interests in Lamar, who has requested a trade out of Baltimore. Brad didn't really say anything. Dan Campbell, unsurprisingly, did. So let's listen in.
Yeah, look, Lamar's a heck of a talent. You know, trying to defend that guy has been something else. We played them 2 years ago. But, man, we got a quarterback. So I'm like, we got a quarterback, and thank God we got one. And so we're good. But, man, he's a heck of a talent.
You know, Ben, they've found different subtle ways, I think, to vouch for Jared Goff over time. You know, maybe he's our quarterback for 2023, which leaves open the door long term, and different variations of that. That was pretty damn definitive that Jared Goff is the quarterback of the now and the future for Detroit. And again, they could draft anyone. Like, they don't have to do shit just based on what they said at a swanky hotel in March. But the way they talk about Jared Goff, it just feels like they're fully committed to the guy. I think they partially committed before they saw the way that played out in the media and how people were still hedging off of him and trying to figure out ways to send a first round quarterback to them, Anthony Richardson. Now it's Lamar. I mean, the Lions are, I think, probably the trendiest team that I saw in terms of landing spots for Lamar. And Dan Campbell comes out here this morning and is like, I'm like, you know, we got a quarterback and thank God we got one. he's right. Like, the price of a quarterback is immense. Getting Lamar costs 2 first round picks plus basically a fully guaranteed contract. That's a serious investment, and Lamar is a serious quarterback, a tremendous talent. But if you got a guy who's already playing top 5 ball in this offense, you know what you got in him. Like, he's got obvious deficiencies, and we've talked so much about that, Ben. But at that price point, hanging on to 2 first round picks, of course they're going to hang on to Jared Goff over Lamar Jackson. That never really made sense to me, and I think the Lions are just basically coming out and saying that.
Yeah, and they've done a really good job at committing to Goff this offseason, like you said, like much more than they had last offseason. Of course, that's based on his play, but this was the most like stamp of approval that like the head coach or general manager has had for him. I mean, seriously, getting asked about Lamar Jackson and laughing and just going, yeah, we're good, man. We're good. We got one. Like, that's not like everything you've heard us say about Dan Campbell. He's genuine. That's not a play. He's not playing a game here. I feel very confident in saying that, but just like, yeah, that just absolutely speaks. And I mean, while Brad Holmes is never going to come out and fully say that, he's always going to end with, there's never going to be a player we won't look at if he's going to make our team better. I mean, Dan Campbell will send it home and be like, nah, we're good. Quite the commitment to Goff. I mean, like you said, we've said everything that needs to be said about him, but I mean, everything he's done, earning praise as the third or fourth best quarterback in the NFC. I mean, it might have broken my brain, but he still earned it, and I can't really disagree with it. So that's where they're at with that.
No doubt. I will say, just to piggyback off what you said, Ben, you know, I've been around this game for a decade, and I've covered, I think, 4 different head coaches, including interims, maybe even 5. I don't know. I'd have to think about it, but going back to Jim Schwartz, Dan Campbell, by far, I mean, by many, many measures, is the most honest of them all. What he says he means, and he means it in the ways that matter most, which is with his players. You know, like the players that we talk to love the honesty of this regime, and they will let players know directly where they stand. You know, this is what you need to do to win a starting job. This is what you need to do to not get cut. like when they get cut, it's like we asked for this and we didn't get it. I mean, players really like the clarity they get from these guys. Campbell's honesty also extends to the ways that don't really matter for a coach. It's nice for us, but like he goes up into a press conference and says what's on his mind. He says the truth. I've never really seen that before. He's not playing games. I don't think he has a smoke screen in his body. And so when he has that definitive of a quote about Jared Goff, I mean, Goff is going to start for this team in 23. That's true. Even if they take a guy, in the top five, of this draft. But it remains true, I think, going forward, at least right now. I mean, we don't know what kind of opportunity they'll have. If there is an Anthony Richardson that maybe falls to six, but as of right now, I think more definitively than ever, Jared Goff is the quarterback of the now and the future of the Detroit Lions. Let's get to our last little clip here. Eh? I did want to get to Brad Holmes talking about Jamal Williams, and it just felt kind of fair because Jamal Williams had gone out there after things broke down between him and the Lions. The Lions signed David Montgomery. I think a matter of hours later, maybe even less than that, Jamal Williams turned around and signed a deal with the New Orleans Saints. And he called the Lions' offer disrespectful, which I think was surprising to a lot of people, given his stature with the organization and how mutually beneficial his stay here was. You don't typically hear dirt from that, like that from a player like that. And yet Jamal was clearly unhappy. And now we got Brad's side of the story. So let's hear Brad Holmes on Jamal Williams and the negotiations that broke down here earlier this month.
Yeah, so just like I told you guys at the combine, it was mutual interest. We wanted Jamal back. Me and Jamal had good conversation at the end of the season about, his desire to want to come back, and that was legit. And when we left the combine, we had a conversation with his agent probably like either right before or after that I spoke to you guys there. So thought that he was heading in the right direction. And man, I love Jamal. One of the greatest stories is, when we first signed Jamal, I don't know if I even told you the backstory. Jamal was like a target to add in free agency when I was interviewing for this job, just to be able to pair DeAndre Swift with a guy like him. So, and then when we signed Jamal, we was in this conference room that's got a big old Lions logo, and we just kind of banged the wall and said, "Man, this ain't gonna be the same." And it's just everything that you guys know about Jamal, and on top of his ability as a running back, those are all things that made us want to bring him back. And from a budgeting and planning standpoint, pre-free agency, we had an allotment of resources set aside really for Jamal. Didn't really even really consider another running back, higher than that amount of resources that we set aside for Jamal. And, business happens, and, that's part of this business. And it just didn't work. But when the market crystallized and it got to a point where David was in play, kind of within the range of resources that we had set aside, that's when we went ahead and went forward with David, which we're extremely excited about. He's a very good football player. He's one of the guys that, me and Dan talked about a lot about when we play them. I mean, yes, you're definitely concerned about Fields running, but really concerned about David Montgomery. Just kind of, he's a hard guy to bring down. I mean, ever since college, Iowa State, he's always kind of been at the top of forced tackles missed. And, he's a hard guy. He's a tough runner. He's good in the passing game. He's a good runner. He's a great addition, but definitely we try to make it work with Jamal. It just didn't happen.
Okay. So let's, peel back the layers just a little bit. The sense that I get from talking to folks and reading some, tea leaves from what Brad said, sounds to me like, basically, they wanted Jamal back and they made him what they viewed as a competitive offer. I think it was probably, you know, not as much as they gave David Montgomery, but probably in that same range, which was 3 years, $18 million. And they made that offer to Jamal, and he sat on it, or his agent sat on it. And the market continued to evolve, and the Lions were getting nervous they might miss out on the kind of running back they wanted to complement this offense. And so they made a move. And I like the move for Detroit. I mean, all things being considered equal, like David Montgomery is more productive, slightly. I mean, it's comparable. The yardage is like per carry is comparable, but Montgomery played behind a worse line, better pass catcher, 2 years younger. You pay a small premium for that. I think Jamal signed for 3 years, $12 million. So you pay a little bit more money, but you get a younger back who breaks way more tackles, better pass catcher. I mean, they got the better player, and you're going into a win now. Like, this is their window to win, Ben. So now they have a better running back, extremely durable guy. It's a good move. They do lose something in the locker room, and I think that's where they'll feel the loss the most. They'll need some other guys to step up into the leadership void. And I'm sure we'll see that process play out in the coming months. But clearly there was mutual interest between Jamal Williams and the Lions, but the negotiations broke down. Jamal was very upset. He called the Lions offer disrespectful. The Lions contend that they made a respectful offer in the ballpark of what they paid David Montgomery. What was your take on when you heard what Brad had to say in that whole situation?
You know, I appreciated his answer. He's trying to be as honest as possible in that answer. And I do believe him to an extent. I appreciated that he kind of captured all the feelings of like the confusion among the fan base, why Jamal was so important to the franchise. I mean, telling that story of him banging the Lions logo in the conference room and saying that's not going to be the same, that really captures what lured Jamal Williams to these fans around here. Like, he didn't just sign with this team. He kind of embraced it as part of his DNA and made it a point to like, I'm going to help turn this thing around. So I appreciated Brad kind of like acknowledging that. It's tough for me to figure out, because you know where I stand on Montgomery versus Williams. It's an on-field upgrade. You're getting younger. You're getting more explosive. You're getting elusive. You're upgrading your pass-catching ability at both running back spots. I did find it interesting to say that we had an allotment of resources set aside for Jamal, and we didn't consider signing somebody kind of until what you just laid out with the agent kind of sitting on the deal or what have you, what happened there. But it does sound like it was a torn decision to make, but at the end of the day, it sounds like they made the tough decision. It's like, all right, he's sitting on that offer. We've got a chance to get younger, to get better, to get more explosive in the same kind of ballpark of what we had set aside for Jamal. So let's go ahead and do that. And, you know, maybe that's what disrespected Jamal. It's the first time we've heard something like this happen with this new regime, and it's like the last person he would have expected that from like a couple of months ago. So kind of just a strange ending to like a marriage that kind of felt like a perfect match for most of their time here. But appreciated Brad's answer. He did the best that he could with that answer for sure.
I think one thing that's gone a little bit unsaid in this discussion about Jamal Williams, Dave Montgomery, is this is natural pain that occurs in a rebuild, that occurs when you're on the ascent. And it's been a number of years since the Lions have been on the ascent, so maybe folks have forgot. But when you're getting better, when you're entering a window to actually win something, you're going to have to replace players. Like, you want to get better. That's the point. And Jamal functioned so well in his role as the between the tackles guy, the goal line guy. I mean, the 17 touchdowns last year, I think 13 of them, if memory serves, were from the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 yard line. And I'm not taking anything away from Jamal. The record, you know, breaking Barry's mark for touchdown runs in a season, 17 of them is extraordinary. He had 1,000 yards. So clearly Jamal was productive in a lot of ways. But I think that sometimes people get a little like nostalgic or romantic about him because he's so likable. He gives these great interviews and all these things. But like, there was a stretch in the second half of the season where is bad the word? I mean, I think he averaged yards a carry for like 2 months at one point. And the Lions would have lost games if not for Jared Goff basically carrying the offense for a few weeks when they couldn't run the ball. Mm-hmm. And Jamal Williams is a big reason for that. I mean, DeAndre Swift was banged up. And now Jamal is a year older. I think he's 28 or turning 28, something like that. Coming off two high usage seasons. Good, fun year. But I think they view David Montgomery as a better player. He's more elusive. He breaks more tackles. He's more consistent. He's not a star. Like, you know, he's not going to break a game or anything. But for the Jamal Williams type of function in the offense, a guy that gets you to the next set of downs, the guy who pounds the ball into the end zone. I think Montgomery is better. He's more elusive. He breaks more tackles. And I think the pass catching ability really sets him apart too. It's a better fit for this offense, which really thrives on creativity, using guys in different spots in the offense. You think of an Amon-Ra St. Brown lining up all over the place, or DeAndre Swift when he's healthy. That's when this offense is at its best. And a guy like Montgomery fills that better than Jamal Williams. A little bit of drama on his way out the door, but like, I think bottom line is the goal in a rebuild is to get better. The goal going into a win now season is to have the best players possible to achieve what you want to achieve. And I think they have that in Montgomery.
No, I agree too. And to your point, I mean, Williams, 415 carries over the last 2 years. He had 500 through his first four in Green Bay. We haven't seen how he responds to that workload. Turns 28 next week, as you correctly said right there. So, yeah, it's a tough decision. It's a tough decision for Brad Holmes, it sounds like. It sounds like it still has kind of annoyed a lot of the fan base just because this was an easy guy to love who performed out of his drawers last season. But, yeah, I mean, Montgomery just screams as someone that's like, this guy has a lot more to offer if you actually put him behind an NFL offensive line. And like, no offense to the individuals on the Bears offensive line, but that's pretty safely been the worst offensive line in football the last 2 years. So it's kind of like, you're going to build your foundation through an offensive line, get a guy that's going to be able to take full advantage of it. Not saying Jamal didn't this past year, but this past season was an outlier for him. Year six, first 1,000-yard campaign. First time with over 5 rushing touchdowns. So that's like an extreme outlier. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Tough decision had to be made, but that's where this thing's at in this stage of the rebuild. There's going to be more of those down the line.
Yeah, if things continue to go well, which to this point they have. The momentum is insane, Ben. We're recording this on March 28th.
Listen to us.
You got the draft to come. They have 5 of the first 81 picks in the draft. They have 2 of the first 18 picks, including 1-6. Like, in addition to winning 8 of 10 down the road last year with the youngest roster on the field in the NFL, with what they've done in free agency now, particularly in the secondary, addressing, I would say, most of their most immediate needs. There's some remaining guys in there, including interior defensive line. But to win as much as they did in the second half of last year, with the roster they had and the lack of experience that it had, but now it has an extra year to get older, and you plug the most immediate needs with that kind of free agent class going into a draft where you have about as many resources as almost anyone, top 5 or top 10 for sure. It's easy to understand the praise, and I'm just not used to it as a Lions player. I'm not used to it. I don't think that either. And that's why it was fun to come down here. And I know I didn't cover the meetings, but like, to hear some of the things they had to say as they start to gain more notoriety in the league and more acclaim, and people start to pay more attention. I mean, this team matters more now than it ever has. It's more relevant than ever. I think, you know, when we see the schedule come out in a few weeks, we're going to see more primetime games, all that kind of stuff, because the time is now for Detroit.
Yeah, so long to our cushy 1 p.m. Sunday jobs.
I know. I need a new job. All right, let's get out of here. Ben, good stuff. I'll see you back in Michigan here next week.
Yes, sir. This has been Ben Raven and Kyle Mikey of MLive's Detroit Lions Beat. Thank you for listening to the Dungeon of Doom, an MLive Detroit Lions podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Acast, Apple, Spotify, Google. Like I said, wherever you get them and listen to them, make sure to subscribe to the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks again.